Can we just talk?
Let your FM talk with Faith Mangope. Monday to Thursday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m.
It is 30 minutes after 8 o'clock. Of course, it's time for us to get into our After 8 is After 8. And whoo, breathe out the first hour. Whoo. Because we need to talk about matters when it comes to social grants in this country. How is it that we get to create a sustainable, an autonomous people, right? People and an economy out of what we've already been given. Now, when it comes to the sustainability, and I think also the use of social grant, we can never deny the impact of social grants. We can never deny the difference that that 350 rand makes, or whatever grant that you're on makes, in your livelihood and your ability to eat. Because sometimes that 350 rand is what you've got between you and hunger. So we will never ever deny the importance of actually having a grant system or a universal income grant system in any country. The purpose of this conversation is to look at how then do we sustain it, and how do we then create a revitalized economy so that people don't have to depend on social grants, or the 47% of South Africans that are currently on social grants don't have to be on social grants. How do we create a South Africa where you've got about 10% of people on social grants, not the 47% of people on social grants? Because if we were to say that social grants must be removed, that is coming from a very privileged perspective that we can't afford. Right. So if 350 rand stands between me and hunger, how do we then create a space in this country where 47% of us are not relying on social grants, where it's just 10% of us? How do we get society off social grants? How do we even sustain social grants? How do we sustain livelihoods in South Africa? That is the conversation that we're having this evening, as we welcome our guests as well into this conversation. This is going to be quite intricate as well. So we've got Fanisi Toka, who is the General Manager for Grants Operation at the South African Social Security Agency. That is SASSA. So Fanisi Toka is joining us from SASSA. We've also got Dr. Kelly Hawson, who is the Senior Research Specialist at the Institute for Economic Justice. We're also joined by Professor Alex van der Heuwe, who is the Chair of Social Security System Administration and Management Studies at the Wits School of Governance. We're also joined by Humbulani Nachadamba, who is a social activist, academic, as well as author. So thank you so much to all of you for joining us this evening, and a very good evening as well to you. Perhaps let me start off with you, Fani, regarding the social grant system. Now, SASSA system obviously has had its hiccups over, you know, the past few weeks, whether it's post office related and et cetera, et cetera. This is not the conversation this evening. You are handling a situation where you've got about 47% of South Africans rely on social grants. Let's talk a little bit about some of the work and what is actually involved in the administrative procedure in ensuring that people actually get the grants and the right amount of grants every month. Oh, Fani seems to have disappeared from us. Let's try. Professor Alex, maybe let me move on to you as we try to get Fani back on the line as well. 47% of South Africans relying on social grants. I would have loved to see a South Africa that only 10% rely on social grants, but that is not the case. But the conversation becomes then, how then do you start sustaining the reality that we're currently in?
Well, the first thing to note is that the number of people on social grants is in itself an indicator of dysfunctionality at another level of government policy, which is dealing with economic growth and performance. And that has to be addressed, and it has to be addressed through different tools and different interventions. The social grants are an important permanent measure to protect people who, for one reason or another, end up as income vulnerable or without incomes for reasons that are beyond their control. And essentially, if you leave them without income, they are fundamentally excluded from participation in society. So part of getting people back, you talked about the issue of agency or autonomy. Agency is about the ability to do things, and without an income in the world we live in today, you are heavily excluded from participation. So it's a necessary part of making sure, it's like giving people water in order to survive until they can eat, so to speak. You've got to give people an ability to survive and move beyond survival, and therefore it is it's always going to be necessary. It's always necessary to deal with the what can be regarded as the market failures in the distribution of income. But we're also dealing with the situation unrelated to the social grants, where the economy is being hampered in its economic development and growth. But that in itself does not remove the absolute necessity for protecting the people who are most vulnerable.
And we're gonna. I want us to deep dive into this because it's also about sustainability, right? If 47% of South Africans rely on social grants, that means it's a sustainable precedent, or you have to create sustainability within the precedent that you've actually caused. Kelly, let me bring you in here, because it was also the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, I think one of the State of the Nation addresses, where he was speaking here about how one of the guys who used the universal income grant, and he managed to make an ice cream business. And then that ice cream business kind of flourished. And everybody was clapping and cheering. And of course, we subsequently had load shedding, where it takes away the utilization of ice cream and the like. The ideal situation would be people to use the 350, let's say the income grant. They would use that, right? And they would use it to better themselves off. So they would use it to look for jobs. They would use it to send a CV. They would use it to perhaps start a business. But is that truly the reality that we're seeing on the ground? I mean, are we seeing people use 350 rand so that they can jack up the CV, so that they can, you know, start a business? Or are we actually seeing this 350 rand being used to buy food, to pay for the little electricity that I've got, to maybe get me around within the taxes, within the parameter that I'm actually living in?
Yes, thanks. Thanks so much for having me, and thanks for the question. Look, it is a complicated picture, and I think, as you rightly point out, that 350 rand, I mean, it's not even adequate to help somebody meet their basic food needs every month.
Yeah.
So we would ask, how then can it be possible that people that income to be able to build better lives for themselves, to be able to build sustainable livelihoods? But the fact,
Kelly,
is that
I'm just sorry to interject there. May I ask a huge favor? Hold that thought. I want to give an opportunity to respond fully, but let me go pay some bills. We'll come back shortly after this. 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. And may I ask you this question? Because ultimately, South Africans, you who are paying taxes, we are the ones that have to make sure that these social grants, number one, get to the people that they're supposed to get to. Hey, so the administrative part must be airtight so that the people that are supposed to receive these grants get it. But number two, it becomes a question around how then do we start building a sustainable South Africa? And is it sustainable? And I'm asking you, honestly, is it sustainable to have 47% of South Africans relying on social grants? Is it sustainable? Will it work? I'm not talking about, is it necessary? Because right now the economy is not doing too well. Right now people are, the last statistics, they're saying that people are about 6.4% poorer. Right? But how sustainable is it that almost half of your population is dependent on a social grant? Kausane SASSA shuts down for a whole month. What does it mean for South Africa? And I'm just being honest. Tomorrow, or maybe for a month, heaven forbid, or maybe for 2 months, SASSA, for whatever reason, shuts down. What happens? What happens to the country? What happens to the people? What happens to those that 350 or whatever amount they were receiving was the basis between them and poverty? Is it sustainable to have 47% of South Africans dependent on a social grant? And how then do we start making it sustainable? Let me ask you another question, because it's one thing to bring problems, but it's a different thing to bring solutions, right? How do we bring a society, or how do we build a society that is not dependent on social grants? What must we do? How do we wean off society off social grants? Is it possible in the current discourse of this country? I would love your opinion. I'd love your voice notes. First, along the sustainability of 47%, almost half of the population being dependent on social grants. But secondly, what would be the solution to this problem? Do we stop it completely? But then what do we do? I don't have the solutions. That's why I've got the guests here. And I've got you here as well to add into this conversation. Kelly, as I was asking you really about this very same thing around the use of these social grants. 350, can you really start a business? You know, can you really start a business with 350? Can you really jack your skills up with 350? Or is it really, honestly, going to just keeping a person alive?
Yeah, look, I would agree with Alex on the point that economic exclusion is not sustainable. So the question becomes, how do we enable people, how do we give them the tools to build sustainable livelihoods for themselves, to participate in the economy? And you're right when you say that the 350 is being spent on basic necessities. There was research done for the Department of Social Development that said that 93% of people who were getting the 350 were spending it on food, because that's people's most immediate basic need. You know, we know that about a third of the country, one in five households faces food insecurity and is hungry. So in that situation, yes, it is just covering the cost of basic needs. And it has much less purchasing power in 2023 than it did when it was introduced in 2019 because of high inflation. So it doesn't even protect people against hunger in the same way that it used to. But despite that, we still know that people are somehow finding a way to use that money to have greater agency over their lives, to make more choices for their lives. We know that receiving that 350 rand increased the likelihood of someone being employed by 3 percentage points. It made it easier for people to get into jobs. We also know that the cost of searching for a job per month, based on a study that was done in 2019, is about 938 rand. But despite that, matriculants, young people who are receiving the Social Relief of Distress Grant, were still using it to help supplement their job costs. Against the odds, they were going out and still trying to participate in the economy. So the 350 rand is inadequate, but we must give more of a safety net to enable people to get onto the first rung of the ladder.
Yeah, I think more than anything else, finally, I think we managed to get you back again, and a very good evening to you. Let's talk a little bit, and I think even SASSA made commentary on this, about how many young graduates and young people depend on the Social Relief of Distress Grant. There were articles that were coming out about how a lot of these grant recipients, unfortunately, are these young graduates, are these kids that went to school but just can't get jobs, right? So they are there, and this is a generation. These are the 21-year-olds, the 22-year-olds, the 24-year-olds, the 28-year-olds who can't get jobs and at a very young age are having to depend on some kind of a grant so that they can relieve themselves from some kind of even deeper poverty.
You're correct, Faith, because the other question that one will flip of this coin is whose responsibility is it to ensure that there is some of these people that are actually receiving social grants are afforded an opportunity to be able to gain some skills? Because surely not everything can be the responsibility of government. We know government is doing its best, but once they graduate, what is the role that is to be played by private sector? Because if everything has to be looking at government, it is us that we are going to be gathering in this engagement tomorrow, talking about a huge payroll bill for government. So I think generally, the problem at hand, it becomes a societal problem. It is not a one-size-fits-all for government, but I guess private sector has a bigger role to play into this particular picture in ensuring that they are able to establish programs, even if Some of these people does not have to be employed on a permanent basis, full time, forever, but to be able to be creative enough to create programs that can be able to help absorb some of these people to create some basic skills which will enable them when they get released, they can be able to do other things. But you are correct. From where we are as SASSA, those that are receiving these particular grants are actually qualifying to receive them. And I guess the rest of the other elements that we've cited are bigger than us as SASSA, but for the society in general.
Yeah. And then I guess, Ma'am Humulani, the question is, where do we start to correct? And how do you start to correct this kind of conundrum? As I said, you can't. You can't have almost half of the population relying on grants. Tomorrow, SASSA shuts down. I'm sorry, Fanny, but something happens and SASSA shuts down. We can have a lot of hungry people in this country.
Thank you. Thank you. I do motivation and rehabilitation. I always tell young people, but if in a street there are 10 youth who are receiving that 350, it becomes 3,500. If they are at school or at church and they are 100, a group of 100, they've got 35,000 in their pockets, but each one holding 350 rand. So if they can come together and they put that money together, if they put 35,000 for 10 months, these people will be using 350,000. It's just unfortunate that individually, people are not thinking about using that money, maybe saving it for a longer period like a year, because we have decided to be dependent, and this dependency has got some serious repercussions. Because, mind you, we are not talking about Jewish youth here. We are not talking about white youth. We are not talking about Indian youth or any Caucasian child. We are talking mainly about the black child, the black youth who is graduating with a degree, but the family that is paying for that degree has nothing to do with it, do not know what to do. Even the youth who received that degree cannot use it unless that person is employed. So I think the government should start with the syllabus at school. Unless we change the syllabus, which is creating hungry, poor, dependent young people, we will not win the battle, because we are trying to solve the end point of a plant. We are solving the fruit of poverty. We are not looking into the root cause of the problem. With us as black people, the issue is the syllabus. We are studying things that we cannot use, that we cannot use to put bread on the table. Look at the content of what we are studying. If it's not stones in geography, it will be in life science, we'll be studying low caste and millipedes and centipedes and what. Those things do not convert into a profitable knowledge. So if the government is serious about eradicating poverty with us, they should check the content of what they are teaching us. People are coming into our country from Zimbabwe. Somebody with grade 9 from Zimbabwe can make a bathtub. That person can do anything that they can do, can make them profitable.
Sorry, Ma'am Humbulan, we seem to have mixed up lines. Are you still with us? Hi, Ma'am Humulani.
Hello.
Ah, there we go. Yes, you can continue. You were speaking about that child from Zimbabwe. Yeah.
The content of education, if it has got nothing with technical subjects, We cannot make our own clothes. We cannot produce our own food. I have got an example of a young person called Tatsedo. He's a graduate. Last year when he was complaining about what can I do with my 350, I told him, take the whole 350, go and buy seeds from the shop there.
Mm.
And then he started. He started producing cabbages, spinach, and now he is supplying to all stars around in Sibasa and Poyando. Now he has got a car. From that 350, he has changed the perception of just complaining that it is little. I don't know what to do with it. If young people are serious about developing their own lives, they can use that money. Buying things that can change the situation. If somebody starts selling data with that 300 and use 50 and maybe for transport, they can change their life. It's only that we are coming from a position of being called the poor, a dependent, a indigent, a what. So we think indigently, we think as indigent. So I think if the government is serious about this situation, we cannot treat the outcome of a situation. Let us treat the course from grade one. Let people be taught the education which will liberate them, not the education which enslaves us, because we are continuing with the education of the apartheid era, where black people were being educated in order to be employed, wherever it would be in the farms or in. It is the duty of the parents who are sending the child to school. If my child is going to do medicine for 6 years, can't I build a surgery? Can't I build offices? If my child is going to do law, why do we make it hard for him that he will go to school, he will come back, then he will start building and what? You find a parent who has got a child at the university, they are buying a new car, they are buying a pair of sofas at 50,000, they are extending a dwelling house. And let me tell you, in Africa, the African people do not have the poverty as it is being exaggerated, because every family has got a burial scheme, my friend. Every month they are putting money so that when they die, they will be buried. That's why they are affording these luxurious and what funerals. How can you, from a poor family, how can you afford a coffin of 70,000?
I hear you, Mamhumbulani, and you're mentioning very real insights, very real on the ground insights that we need to be able to ventilate and interrogate as a society, you know. And the first thing is, have we become dependent of mind? That it's not the issue of the social grant, is the dependency factor that has been created in our minds. In other words, I'm already anticipating 350 next month. So the notion of creating something for myself is not something I am more enthusiastic about. And these are just things I'm just throwing at you. Please feel free to rebuttal. Let's talk about it. Is it also an issue around a dependent mind? That our minds have become so dependent on receiving that we're not picking ourselves up and actually doing something, even with the 350 that has been made available by government. Let's take a couple of your voice notes and then we'll take a break. We'll come back. We've got more voice notes. We've got calls and we'll continue this conversation.
Hi, Faith. I couldn't hear the name of the lady who was talking just now, who's talking about these kids to save the 350. How possible is that? You are hungry, you don't have nothing, you're not working, then you're getting a 350 to save it. How will you survive? What are you going to be eating the next day? That 350 away the young. We talk like come at our much he be do I talk shelter. Then you need to gather together and save this. I am guys. No. Arska Valankam Banababang. Chavasakwam Chavasent. Guys, Holikan guys.
Evening, Faith here and listeners. Yeah. Yes, person descends from divine. I think the grant per se, the amount of 350 is a drop in the ocean and for the whole month. But government supposed to increase that amount. And in the same time, trying to upskill the youth is wandering the street in the townships there. They must take these kids, go there. There are a lot of schools that upskills the youth. They must go there, even Kampala, yeah, to get skilled, because it tends to be too much difficult to get a job without any kind of skills. That is the main problem that I see there. And the ultimately now, I think they're supposed to create more jobs, yeah, and help those with the small business. Yeah, pick up Joshua.
Good evening, Faith. My comment here, the government is still failing us. If those 350, they can help us to build our own factories, our own firm, like Bo Unilever, Bo Tiger Brand, and come up with our own products, we have our own resources here. We can do our own snacks. We can do our own roll-on and many things. Thank you, Faith. The government is failing us. Because they want us to work for the whites.
How do we bring a society?
Okay, let's pause it there from voice notes. Let's take a quick ad break. We come back. We've got more of your calls. It is 43 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let's continue with the conversation this evening. Are social grants and how do we sustain them? Are they sustainable in the current economic context of the country? Or and more than anything else, how then do we start building autonomy from the dependency of social grants? And remember what I said in the beginning, we're not even tackling the impact of social grants because we know what it is. That 350 stands between people and hunger. That 350 is for groceries, it's for food. The little food that people can get. That 350 has got bread. I can't even say eggs anymore. So it's for bread. It's for pap. It's for some vegetables. It's for something. Then how do we get society slowly but surely off the social grant? Because currently we've got 47% of South Africans dependent on social grants. Prof. Alex, is it possible to do so without economic activity? I mean, let's say that our economy, if you're looking at the statistics and it was the finance minister, Enoch Godongwana, who was sharing these as well this past weekend at the Kgalema Motlanthe Foundation dialogue. And he was speaking about how over the years, for example, if you have to look at the rate of growth within our country, right? We, for the past, let's say, 5-6 or so years, we've been growing by margins, like 1.3% there, 2% there. In the early 2000s, that's when we had significant growth, right? So we had about 4% growth spat, and then we had about 5% growth spat, and then we went down and we had about a 3% growth. And then COVID happened, and then we had an economic recovery of about, especially 2021, we had the biggest economic recovery. I think it was sitting at about over 3%. But then things started dying down a little bit, right, for other reasons. And then we're seeing that we're growing by like 0.6% sometimes. We have these growth spurts, and then we grow by 0.6% or 0.7%. All this at the back of the existence of social grants that people are dependent on. And is it possible, therefore, to wean a society over the grant system if that's how our economy is performing?
Yes. Firstly, I want to just talk to the issue of dependency that you've raised, because that's not correct. Social grants and this form of social protection are a permanent protection that's required in society, and it's not dependency-inducing. There is no evidence to show that it induces dependence on people. What we are largely doing is protecting people from factors that are beyond their control. And it gives them a degree of agency. Social grants can have multifaceted impacts on how people, on people and on communities, because they can then spend, they spend in their communities. That in itself generates jobs and work within that area. So so dependency is not really a feature of this. The problem that we have in relation to growth is a separate factor. And that's largely, it can be argued, and it's been argued by economists, I'm an economist, that government has largely caused the crisis that we're in. So first of all, if we have to look at the amount we're spending on social grants, about 254 billion, you have to take into account we're spending 309 billion rand a year on basic education. We spend on post-school education about 457 billion rand, way more than social grants. And worst of all, we spend on debt servicing 340 billion rand a year. And that's entirely due to the fact that fiscal discipline has basically broken down in government. And that's largely because government has basically allowed the fiscus to essentially allowed overspending and in many cases bloated administrations to continue. But the decline in the economy has largely been due to, in the recent years post-COVID, it has been because of Eskom, the collapse of energy generation, which severely impacted on economic output, and we've had the collapse of Transnet, which is absolutely critical for our logistics services in South Africa. So we can't export if they close down. We've had a movement away of investing in much of our mining industry and in manufacturing, all because of the way in which government has largely been managing its relationship with the private sector. So what we've done is we've hamstrung economic growth in South Africa, which has then reduced the government revenue streams. So this is a different problem. This is on the how you manage the supply side of the economy, and government really has a lot to answer for on that score. That the fact that we have lots of vulnerable people that are increasing where they shouldn't have been it puts a burden on the social protection system, on the income system of income transfers, but it still it amounts to sort of around about 3.4% of GDP. We're not talking about it being half of GDP, but what we should be doing is making sure that our economic growth is working, but also that our basic education system produces children and young adults who are able to effectively engage in a modern economy. We haven't done that. And that's because of the productivity of the 309 billion rand we're spending on basic education. We don't have proper teachers operating. We don't have the right principals in many schools. We don't have proper supervision of outcomes and what's happened in basic education is our performance in schools tends to mirror the socioeconomic status of the community within which those schools reside.
Oh, but Professor Alex, sorry, just interject there. I thought it was a fitting moment to say to you. I just had a conversation with the Deputy Minister of Basic Education before we went into this particular conversation, and it's quite interesting that you're saying that actually the part of the problem also lies in the way in which we are educating our kids in this country, because they were coming in from a perspective saying we're not doing too bad. I mean, they certainly cracks, but it's not so bad as we are making it up to be, almost as though we're exaggerating the problem a little.
No, we're not. I mean, I think that the problem is that when your basic education system mirrors our socioeconomic situation, it means that we're not using our education system to advance communities. The whole idea of an education system is that you can leapfrog your socioeconomic circumstances. You can move out of the socioeconomic status of your particular community. You will be different after you've gone through the education system. We're not seeing that. Performance is correlated with the socioeconomic status of the communities within which the schools reside. That is wrong. So what we're seeing is a large portion of our government expenditure on social programs essentially frittered away. And the other parts where public services and functions are crucial to the functioning of the wider economy, we're seeing those collapse. So Transnet going down to sort of about 13% of its former capabilities, the fact that coal can't reach the harbors, that the power stations are collapsing, all of those have impacted on our economic growth when other countries are growing. So that is something that has to be corrected. But what I get concerned about is when people start to say, no, we're spending too much on social grants, and that's somehow the problem. We will always have to have a system of social grants. We have to have it as part of our basic system of income protection, because having access to basic and decent incomes is crucial to having sustainable societies.
I've got literally 20 seconds before before I pay the bills, Prof, but I have to ask you a yes or no question. At this rate that we're going as South Africa's economy, will we be able to pay social grants at a long-term span?
Oh, yeah, we can. We can definitely do that. That's not the problem. Our problems lie elsewhere.
Got you. All right, it's about 7 minutes to go before the top of the hour. And, of course, we're still with our guests this evening. I want to take a couple of your calls. I've got a couple of your voice notes as well to get by. But more than anything else, we are looking at what does it look like, the sustainability of social grants. How then do we start talking about, should we be lessening the 47%? Should we be increasing the 47%? Should we be giving everybody a social grant? Is it sustainable in the current economic discourse? What needs to be done? And if government does not change trajectory from a decision-making and from a policy-making perspective, can we actually do it? Can we do it? Let me start off with a couple of your calls as well before I go back to my guests and start off in Gqeberha with Tugela. Tugela, hi.
Hi, Faith.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Look, I think the comments by your guests are all relevant. But I think there's one fundamental question that we're failing to ask ourselves.
Yes.
And that is, where is this money going from the hands of the recipient? Remember, what drives an economy is the circular flow of money within that same community. And what we're currently experiencing, and the stats that have been raised by your guests repeatedly here, suggest that within no time, those hundreds of billions that are injected into these communities by the government each month, immediately they go and into the hands of the very same people who are going to go and store them in stocks, bonds, and properties. So what I'm trying to say is the government looking deeply enough into the developmental component of social security grants, or are they content with, as the guests have suggested, with this sense of dependency that I believe was created by the government itself? Because if you are intent on putting up a developmental impact behind the fact that we are protecting these individuals, we would then make sure that they have places in which they can spend that money and have it circulate within their own communities, because that is how economic development and a growing a community economy is founded.
They've got enough money to, for example, to get, like, if I'm understanding, let's say that there are stores, right, that are created specifically so that not only are you spending, but you've got money to spend and you still have some left over. If you're talking here about skills development, that there's spaces where you can, with your $350 a month, find a way to develop yourself in some way or another so that you can become better off. In other words, taking you and using, as you speak about a developmental compact towards social grant, or is the state deliberately creating a dependency on a social grant system?
That's correct, gotcha. Faith, but I think you've taken it a step even further. I'm simplifying it and saying, immediately as I get my 350 rand,
yeah,
I go stand in a shop and I buy groceries with the entire amount, right?
Mm.
And that money is immediately left my community. Immediately, it goes into the bank account of the shareholders of one of the big five shopping or retail stores, and it sits in their stocks and in their bonds and their properties and so forth, because they have they're growing wealth. They're storing their money. Whereas if we have an infrastructure that allows us to spend money within our own community, buying the same goods and services, because we are indeed the markets, right? If we, and I'm saying the demographic that represents that 47% of the population that receives your social security grant, if we are able to circulate that money within our own community for at least 7 days, as opposed to the 24 hours that it leaves our community, it will make a considerable difference in the complexion of, and I'm using the word complexion in a figurative manner here, but in the complexion of those communities. So what I'm basically saying is,
I get you too.
We should put in place measures. The government should put in place policies that make sure that money is spent within those very same communities.
I get you, and thank you very much for that. I wish we had more time. Lorato in Springs, hi.
Hi, sir. How are you?
Very well, thanks, and you. Go ahead.
I'm good. First, look, there's no way that we can talk about economy without talking about the education system. In a way that our education system is creating more and more of employees, more than employees. the employees, not an employer. Look, if we're going to have an education system that doesn't create, that doesn't allow a child that from the varsity or from the tertiary institute will go and start something on his or her own, that means we're still going to be sitting with a problem of unemployment. Mm-hmm. If we're sitting with the problem of unemployment, we'll be having a problem of what? Of the youth that comes from the varsity, that they graduate sitting back without any job. So.
Okay. It starts from a basic education level, Lorato. I hear you. Look, we're probably going to need to ventilate this thing between us as well at another later time. But I'm hoping that it's able to inspire you kind of movements towards what do we do now? You know, what do we do in our own little spaces of influence? What can we do so that money circulates within our economy, so that the money stays within these communities for a longer period of time? But I've got somebody in my studio right now. I'm sure by the little side eye that you've just given me, does that mean that we've got a good show ahead of us? Or what's the topic? Look, usually when you side eyeing me, it's a topic. What's the topic?
The topic was not related to your show. We were just thinking about it last week.
Mm-hmm.
We want to find out, can money buy love? So it's got nothing to do with your show today. It's just a topic that popped up in our head last week.
350 Rand can buy love. That's what you're asking. I'm sure that's what you're asking. Can money buy love?
It all depends.
I don't think it can buy love. I think that it buys affection, it buys convenience, it buys tolerance.
It buys a DJ to come and play at your event to make you completely happy,
mm-hmm.
for you to fall in love with me and for you to think I'm so romantic.
Am I going to fall in love with you and I'm going to stay in love with you after you lose your money?
That's a tough question, hey? Maybe it's the smile. You'll stay for the smile.
Paul Tirard is coming up next with Life and Music with Paul Tirard. Listen, thank you so much to all of my guests. I know that it's never enough time to be able to ventilate these kinds of serious issues, but let's keep talking about them. It's imperative. It's imperative. Let's keep talking about the country that we want to have, the South Africa that we envision for ourselves, the youth that we envision for this country. That becomes imperative. Right? And how do we feel about having a lot of young people, most of young people that are dependent on these social grants? That need the 350. After going to school that we told them to go to, going to varsity, getting the degree, and yet they have to fall in line to get the social grants. Is that a fair society? Let's try to make it work. Remember what I always say. This is our country. If it works, it works for all of us. Until we talk again. Bye-bye.
Can we just talk?
Metro FM Talk with Faith Mungope. Monday to Thursday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m.